Blog Talk Radio.
Another Sports Tonight, proud member of the Fighting Words of Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Gilbert. Of course, you're brought to you each week by Bradford White Water Heaters of Ember, Pennsylvania. When you want to purchase a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com. I'd like to thank Frank and Bob. Another week of sports have gone by. Oh, boy, what can you say? And a lot of good stuff coming up this week of sports. Gentlemen, first off, I mean, good evening, and how's everything going down here?
Good for me, Tom.
Good, Frank.
Doing good.
Yeah, at least we're back in the studio now. No hockey game last Wednesday at the hockey game. Nothing like that. So, what can you say about the Tampa Bay Lightning? They went in a shootout last night at St. Pete Times Forum. But gentlemen, if you watch that game, the linesmen were god awful. They were throwing the puck at the guy instead of dropping it. You know, I mean. I was watching that, and I said to Phil Esposito during the intermission, I says, Phil, bring back John DeMeco and Leon Stick. At least they dropped a puck. These guys are throwing it at their feet. Phil says, Tommy, you're exactly right. You know, drop the puck, you dummy.
Don't blame those officials.
Oh, it was terrible. I mean, these guys couldn't drop a puck. They're just going this way.
Tommy.
Drop the puck. You dummy, so I have to do the rest. Now, how hard is that job to do? A chimpanzee
can drop a puck.
You know
what was terrible, Tommy? You know what was terrible is the Lightning defense.
Oh.
I mean, they you know, that disallowed goal, they allowed that guy to sit right in front of that net and whack away at that puck. There's no way that should have ever happened. They should have buried that guy.
Bob, that was a goal. That was a goal by the replay.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, but, you know, they had the interference rule, but you know, that guy should have never been allowed to stand there.
Well, Toronto owes us one. That's the one Toronto owes us one for several years. So.
Yeah.
But I'd like to welcome to the program. Always a pleasure. Philadelphia sports legend, Mr. Don Henderson. Don, good evening, sir.
I'll tell you, Tommy, always a pleasure, my boy. And hockey's now coming into full swing. Basketball and football are rolling along. And I'll tell you, we got a lot to talk about. Should be a lot of fun tonight.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And the Sixers are in Orlando. Just ready to tip off right now, and the job Doug Collins is doing right now. The season stopped, guys. The Sixers are the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference. Basketball's coming back to the great city of Philadelphia, gentlemen.
Well, I'll tell you, 17-23 is not gonna dazzle the people at the new Wachovia Center, but at least you're right. They've gotten off the schneid a little bit. They were playing really, really poorly, and he sort of brought them back. I agree with you.
Oh, exactly. I remember the old the Philadelphia glory days of the Sixers, world champion, Lou Jackson, Hal Greer, Wally Jones. Of course, Don, you're involved at all the Sixers in their glory days. But still, the Sixers are one of the best franchises in the history of the NBA, going back to the old Syracuse and the Nats days.
Well, I just think if they can get together with the front office and give Doug a little bit of help, make a couple of nice moves, it's going to be more and more difficult now because it – you know, the Knicks have gone through such a long period of time, a real drought, and you follow that, you know, with the teams that they're going to have to play against. And, you know, the Nets are going to get better because the fellow that has so much money, you know, he's just going to make the Nets better by spending money. So the Sixers are going to have their hands full, and they're going to have to do a good job from an administrative standpoint, and Doug's going to have to do a really good job on the floor.
Exactly, and of course they're in Orlando tonight, and the Magic host the Sixers, and the Magic right now, gentlemen, lost four straight. They trail the first place Miami Heat by four games right now, and then I call them the Three Stooges, and I got to give them credit. The Stooges are doing their job in Miami. You know, after LeBron James left the great city of Cleveland, the Cavaliers are back to the old Ted Stepien days, Don, and those days weren't fun.
Well, it's a shame because, you know, really a shame from two standpoints. One, I know that everybody likes to win, and certainly LeBron James is right at the top of the list with the trio of people that they put together to go to Miami. But it's a shame for the city because they had really had a run of about 10 years there where they were right in the thick of things. They were winning 50 games. They were winning 52, 53, 54, and they were always in the hunt. And now it's gone just the other way. I mean, it's really a shame that they just can't seem to find, I guess, enough money to do anything with and players to do anything with. And what are they, 8-32 or something like that?
Yes.
I don't have the paper in front of me, but they're somewhere in that 8-32 range.
Exactly. It's Don West. Columbus Blue Jackets were in town last night, and during the skate yesterday morning, I started hitting around Bill Dellingsworth, who does the Columbus Blue Jackets, does a great job on their TV network. I says, Bill, how many fans you get from Cleveland? He said, majority of our fans are from Dayton. I says, Dayton of all spots, you know? I said, Bill, you're missing the boat because all those fans, all those arenas in the hockey in the greater Cleveland area know LeBron James. You could promote their Rick Nash up there. He says, oh, my God, that's a great idea. And make the drive down every week. And I says, gentlemen, if I was with that organization marketing, my first target market would be this northeastern Ohio. What's there to do up in northeastern Ohio except going to Bowling Alley?
Well, they thought that, you know, when the Gunn brothers built that arena out there somewhere midway between Cleveland and Dayton, and they thought that that's exactly what was going to happen. In fact, Steve Mix, who is from Dayton, but it never really worked. People didn't, whether it was the weather, I don't know what exactly it was, but it never really worked. The people didn't seem to come from Dayton and Cleveland, it was sort of midway in between, and it was really difficult at nights to get crowds in that new building, and it finally went by the boards.
Don, there's a funny story about that. It's called the Coliseum in Richfield.
Yeah, Richfield Coliseum.
Oh, Don, it was a great building. It was a state-of-the-art building. It was fantastic, but if you're coming from, like, say, Sandusky or Lorain, Ohio, you got to look at the weather map. Do I get a clear opening? Is it a clear night? If you don't, you're stuck there for the night because the roads going back, there's two-lane roads,
winding
up down the hill, and then you're stuck there. But all the times I went there, thank God it was a clear night and didn't see any snow. From Lorain, you had to take the turnpike down to exit, I think, exit 11 off the Ohio Turnpike, and there was a Holiday Inn, and it also was a gas station, racetrack gas station there. You made a left-hand turn there, and my car knew the way pretty good to go out to watch a hockey games. But, Don, I remember the old crunching of the snow.
Well, the funny thing about that, Tommy, was that, you know, when the broadcasters came in, they never really stayed in Cleveland because they stayed there. And I can't remember. You would know better than I.
Yes.
But there's a great hotel. There's a waterfall there. I can't remember. It's a pretty famous place. And we always stayed there because it was so far to get from Cleveland out to the Richfield Coliseum. And as you said, if you had bad weather, you know, you'd have to leave at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon to get there. And so we always stayed out there at this, I wish I could remember the name of the hotel
Cuyahoga Falls, probably?
That's it. That's right.
There's a Holiday Inn right off the turnpike, and most of the visiting teams, I believe, stayed there, because this way you're 10 minutes away from the Coliseum.
Correct.
And you remember that place is called the Tavern in Richfield? It was always in there, right? And, you know, before I got in this business, being a fan, I always searched around for the media notes. And they always were in the Tavern in Richfield.
But you're right. When the old Stepien days, that was really a disaster. And you may remember that was Chuck Daly's first head coaching job.
Yes.
And, you know, he didn't know what he was getting into. And so he finally moved from them and went over to Detroit and had great, great years. But, boy, those years in Cleveland were really tough. Those first couple of years that he coached under Stepien.
Oh, and he had the teddy bears out there, and oh boy, that was such a mess. How do you know the Coliseum was built out there, Don? Everybody, it was and Nick Bolletti wanted to build it downtown, and his union problems because George Ford was a city council member. He says you got to hire the people downtown, and so Bolletti says, okay, George, the heck with you. I'm going to build with some land in Richfield, Ohio. And, I mean, it was a gorgeous building, but, geez almighty, getting to it, you had to pray that the snow wasn't down there. And then after when Michael Jordan hit that shot in 89, I swear to God, Don, the whole city of Cleveland had a black cloud on it for until, like, mid-May.
Right. Well, when we first started to go there, we stayed in the hotel, which was right across the street downtown, from the Metro or the auditorium, Metro, whatever that building was.
Right.
It was a wreck, whatever it was. It looked like it had been an opera house or something, and they had a hotel across the street, and it looked like a house of prostitution. And when we first went to Cleveland, that's where we stayed, in that hotel. And I'll never forget, we had a blizzard. And so we're going out to Billy Cunningham stops at the desk, and are we going to be able to get out of the airport? Oh, yeah, the airport's still running. So we all get on the bus. We go out to heading out to the airport. We get about halfway out. Billy gets a telephone call. Nope, the Cleveland airport's closed. We get to the Cleveland airport in the bus and pull in the driveway, and he goes in and checks inside. Said, no, it's going to be closed now probably till tomorrow morning. And this was like 10 o'clock, well, maybe 9 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And so Billy said, okay, everybody back on the bus. Tommy Lasorda was stuck in the hotel, in the airport. So Billy said, come on, Tommy, get on the bus with us. So we get on the bus. We drive back on the Pennsylvania, on the Ohio Turnpike, then the Pennsylvania Turnpike. We stop in one of the restaurants there, and there's nobody in the place, right? So the guy opens it up. Now, you can imagine all these players come in. They all want to eat. There's no cooks. There's nothing. And so Tommy Lasorda and Eddie Liebertor. I don't know if you remember. Eddie Liebertor was a great scout for the Dodgers for years and years and years. Lived in Philadelphia. And terrific guy, really a terrific guy. And he was with us. And we stop in this restaurant, and the guy said, okay. So he goes, starts to cook. Everybody wants the food right away. Well, anyway, we got into Philadelphia at 10 o'clock that night. City was closed down because of the blizzard. And I'll never forget it. We went from the hotel to the Cleveland airport, picked up Tommy Lasorda and Eddie Liebertor, late Eddie Liebertor, and headed back to Philly. It was one of the greatest trips of all time. What stories we told on that bus.
I can't imagine that. Oh, my God. The great stories come out of the bus trip. I remember I took the bus trip going to see. This is the funny story. I always kid Bobby the Chief Taylor about this. Remember, Don, everybody, 74, and the Flyers fan club took a trip to Pittsburgh. So we went out there at 4 hours on the bus. Imagine these fans sitting on a bus for 5 hours getting all their Canadian ginger ales in them, right? That was a game the Chief let in 7 goals, and Bernie lost to Bezel. And when I first got to know the Chief, I said, "Hey, Chief, I was at that game in Pittsburgh back in '74. You must have seen the pucks." Says, "Well, it was a tough game for me. I haven't played in 3 weeks, but Chief, the bus trip back to Philadelphia was fun."
And they didn't even have VCRs in the buses in those days.
No, it was funny. You would hear the beer bottles rattle when the driver made a stop, spinning back and forth. Oh my God, those are the great days, gentlemen, of the great days of sports and growing up in the city of Philadelphia and sports that way, gentlemen. But
well, that's the way you can actually have a lot of fun with the players, and you can have a lot of fun with the coaches, and it was all together. It wasn't corporate like it is today. People that are listening probably don't understand it because they're so used to what we see today, whether it's in the National Hockey League. Although I have to say, of all the teams, baseball, basketball, football, and hockey, the players that are the easiest to work with continue to be the hockey players.
Oh, by all means. Don, that's a great point. I mean, we're going to talk to Zinnikov probably during the All-Star break and that, but here's a funny story. One day, this was I was doing my normal thing in the skates in the morning. We had to go to Brandon. I believe it was last week. So I said, so our media relations manager called me over and says, Tommy, come here. I said, oh, no, no, what I do now. Then I stir up the pot again down there, and he said, Vinny, look, Vinny, let's talk to you. I said, okay, fine. And, you know, Vinny last night had his 900th NHL game last night, and great milestone for Vinny the Cavalier. And Vinny says, hey, I heard you play golf. I says, yeah. I used to have, you know, 10 handicap. What do you do now? That is play right now. I told him I'll play one of our sponsored courses, Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. And Vinny says, man, really? We're going to play in the off season. And Vinny says, after we win the cup, we'll play.
Well, let's hope he's a good prognostic.
You've been waiting a long time, Tommy.
You may be an old man, but we'll try.
But I seen it was Scotty Bowman was in the press box. I left Scotty a note to try to give the show a call, but a nice write-up with Scotty and that. We're talking about the hockey itself. And Don, the way the Lightning is playing right now, they're playing spectacular hockey. They beat Washington with a loss weekend. But that game last night versus Columbus and Rick Nash and company, that was a good hockey game by the Lightning's point of view. It proved the one thing. They didn't play their best. They got to overtime. And Ryan Malone, of all people, wins it in a shootout. So tomorrow night's a test. They're in Atlanta, in Florida, and play Atlanta, a special 5 o'clock game Sunday at the St. Pete Times Forum. So it's going to be interesting, you know, playing Atlanta with this time period. The only road trip they're going to make is Friday. It's going to be Thursday and Friday and home for a 12-game homestand. In hockey, that's unheard of.
Unheard of. You're right. Well, the one thing, I was having dinner with somebody last night, and, you know, I said to him at that time, when everything transpired, when the new owners came in and their decisions about general managers and coaches and player trades and also development of young players, and I said, if you could be at this stage of the season and be tied with Washington, was considered to be, if not the premier team, along with Pittsburgh in the league, and you could say, well, we're going to have 57 points right even though you have a couple of games in hand.
Yeah.
I said, you there's nobody that wouldn't have taken that. You know, I don't care who you are. You're not going to say you thought going into the season at Tampa Bay, going into last night would be even with Washington at 57 points.
Oh, it was because I saw at a training camp, Don and everybody, that this team is for real. They bought in the Guy Boucher system, and what Guy Boucher brought to this Lightning organization was the understanding to do it his way or the highway. The more you do it his way, the more ice time you have. But people don't realize, especially in this market here, who did Guy Boucher have under over him? Steve Yzerman. What did Guy Boucher do for Team Canada on the power plays? And he's seen Stamkos, St. Louis, Le Cavalier play. He's
right.
Seen a Ryan Malone play. He's seen a Kabina play, a Matisse Olsen play. He's seen these guys play the Olympics last year, and that's why he was so valuable coaching pick. It was between Columbus Blue Jackets wanted him, then he went with the Lightning, and Columbus's coach is doing a great job too for the first year for the Columbus and that. But it's just the same thing as that the people believe in Guy Boucher's system, and when Guy Boucher said something, the people are buying into it right now.
Well, that's what it takes. I don't care. You look at any coach that wins, you got to buy into what they believe.
Exactly. I mean, it was fun, but last night reminds me of Leon Stickle, Bill Friday, and the officials.
Well, let's face it. Every time that we talk about basketball or we talk about hockey or even baseball for the most
right.
part, you know, and especially recently with football, I mean, that's all we talk about is what about the officials? What about the officials? Well, I've gotten to the point now where you say, look, you play the game. There's no sense complaining because the officials are probably doing the best job that they had to do, and you just got to go with it. It's unfortunate that we have all the replays that we have in the
right.
sense that you get a second and third and fourth look at the mistakes that they make. And,
yes.
And we get no looks at the calls that they make that are
right.
Right.
You're goddamn right.
So to me, you know, I almost forget about the officials anymore.
Right.
I don't really argue about it anymore. So he said, oh, they missed this call, or they did this, or they did that. You know, maybe they did. But listen, every player is making mistakes all the time. The officials are going to make some mistakes too. That's all there is to it. You got to live with it. It's part of the game.
Exactly. We'll have to get the chief on next week, and he'll tell you some official stories. Oh my.
Well, it's true. I mean, you know,
right.
But again,
right.
as I say, you know, things happen so fast when, yeah,
right.
especially for them. They're right there on the ice. Things wow. happen so fast. We get 5 and 6 looks at it,
yes.
and in slow motion. They don't get that. So, you know, it's bang, bang, and they make a mistake. You just gotta go with it. Keep playing.
Exactly. How about the football games, gentlemen? Really, a lot of great football last weekend, and I'm so glad that Rex Ryan beat Captain Happy. I am so
well,
glad of that.
I'll tell you one thing. We had a clean sweep in picking that game. Not one of us picked the Jets, though, to win the game. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. You know, the only game I picked right was Chicago. And Baltimore looked like they were in great shape. I'd like to ask you fellas about this Baltimore game, because when was the last time you saw, with 1:35 to go in the game, and you know that Roethlisberger's going to throw the ball 50 yards down. I was sitting there thinking, I turned to the fellow sitting next to me. I said, he's going to throw the ball 50 yards down the field on this third and 19, because if they intercept it, it's like a punt. They're going to tackle the guy at the 5 or the 10-yard line, and it's not going to make any difference with 1:30 to go. And they play Tampa, too, and the guy gets behind him and catches the ball for 50 yards. I mean, how do you let a guy get behind you? I mean, it's a fundamental rule you learn in Pee Wee League. And, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable that he throws a 50-yard pass and a guy catches it at the 5-yard line.
Unbelievable. That, you know, to prevent defense. I mean, how many times have we seen games won in that situation?
Oh.
I remember one game in Cleveland. When the Browns were playing 1980, they could have won the division that one game. And here it is against the Minnesota Vikings and Metropolitan Stadium.
Right.
Mashard, he catches that ball away from the Browns defender, touchdown, Minnesota Vikings. I mean, how many times have we seen that in so many careers? I mean, the fundamentals of football. And, Don, this cracks me up. If you're seeing the championship Sunday, this coming Sunday, how many times will players be going offsides? I mean, they've been practicing this since July.
Hey, do you realize
let Bobby and Frank comment, but I mean,
yes.
It's one thing if he throws a 20-yard pass,
right.
and the guy, you know, makes a couple of tacklers miss or something like that, and gets over the 50-yard line, gets down to maybe the 35-foot. But to have somebody throw a 50-yard pass with 1:28 to go in the game, and he's behind you, I mean, to me, I don't understand how you can do that.
No excuse. You're at that point. You should drop back your linebackers, drop back your defensive backs, and just bat that ball down. Or you know, if you got a great shot at it in an open field, go for it. But
right.
that game. I mean, besides that game boiled down to one person, and that was Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco blew that game.
Yeah, he had a bad day.
He didn't get about the second half. That was it.
He had a very bad day, no question about it. I thought that Flacco and Ryan were both going to play well last weekend, both of them from the Philly area, and I really thought that they were going to play well. And unfortunately, neither one of them played well, although Ryan didn't get very much help. They dropped a few on him early, but Atlanta looked like the team that was a 6 seed, not the best team in football.
Oh,
lineman block another lineman on a short kick instead of going for the ball at the 10-yard line. He blocks a guy out of the way. They kick the ball. Then he turns around and kicks the ball. Everybody stands there and looks at it, and Cromartie just picks it up and runs it in.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It's like the one where they tackle him and he rolls over the
ground. Nobody realizes that it's a fumble until the guy just picks the ball up and runs in to be a smartass, and he finds out, oh, I just helped him win the game.
Well, it was no whistle. I mean, they pointed it out time and time again. They showed the play 2 or 3 times, and they said, wait a minute, there's no whistle here. You can't stop playing until there's a whistle. How many times have we seen it now this year in college football and in pro football where the guy rolls on top of somebody, doesn't touch the ground, and keeps on going, and they don't realize that the play's not over?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's a great call, because the ball is live football. People just looking at it instead of picking up.
At those levels, Don, we should never see that.
You're right.
We should
I agree.
Is too many.
Exactly. In the Sunday Beer League, yes, you can see that, but not for playing for a championship in a playoff game. My God, that was god awful. But
I think Baltimore. I thought the Baltimore Pittsburgh game was pretty darn good game, and I'm sorry that you know, I mean, it did go down to the final minutes, and I got to give Roethlisberger credit. He's done it a couple of times now, and you know, he's got the Super Bowl rings to prove it. But I just can't imagine from a coaching standpoint how you could possibly not have your defense set and not let somebody get behind you in a situation like that on a 3rd and 19 or 3rd and 18, whatever it was.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. Remember Brett Favre is against the Eagles game? Remember that Donovan threw that ball up against the Packers? And it was
same thing.
21, and they got 21. It's 4th and 20, I'm sorry. And they got 21 yards out of it.
That's
why
right.
In the heck? I mean, that's right, because half these guys don't think, or, you know, they lose their minds, and they're, you know, they're drilled in it since July 1st in training camp. Go, go, go. Now we're going to see how many pass interferences, offsides, dumb plays by these football teams this coming Sunday. And even in the Super Bowl, you know, they'll make a lot of dumb plays in that. But,
right.
Guys, in 2 more weeks, the Puppy Bowl starts, and I can't wait for that.
There you go.
Well, what do you fellas think of Atlanta? Give me an explanation for how Atlanta could have played as poorly as they played last weekend.
Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers was on fire. Look at what we did against the Eagles. The guy was on fire. And, I mean, Atlanta just laid an egg. I talked to Roger. He's going to come on a little later, Don. And he said the thing in Atlanta, it was a shell shocked up there. Here they expected a win. You win 2 games at home, you're in the big dance, and they couldn't win no one big at home. And here it is, back to the old rivalries. Here it is, Steelers and Jets, and then you got the Packers and the Bears.
Right.
Like, oh boy, here we go. It's just rivalry Sunday once again. The NFL lucked out again.
Well, I just can't understand how Atlanta could have been that flat.
Oh.
I just it doesn't make sense to me that a team that played that well during the course of the season just absolutely folded their tent in a playoff game. They just never really came to play.
Oh, it's so sad, because I know the director, vice president, director of public relations, Reggie Roberts. He was down here in Tampa, and like, oh boy, it was shocked to see that team play that way. I wanted Atlanta to be in the big dance, because they represent the South well, and the NFL were guaranteed of a good game. Now they're going to be iffy weather in Chicago for snow and Pittsburgh for snow. That takes effect, guys, of the way the football game is played, a cold, hard field and then instead of a fast turf.
Right. Well, I haven't talked to Rodgers since the game. I'll be interested to hear what he has to say when he comes on, because you know, he follows the Atlanta Falcons very closely since he moved down there a couple of years ago. And,
yes.
And is at all the games. And so I'll be interested in how he evaluates what happened.
He starts saying the coach is upset. The wife and his family is at the podium was very upset today. He's like, oh boy, that's not a good, because you hate to see, you know, it's like what Arthur Blank did for that team, the season ticket try for that team. He put money in that organization. He's a hands-on owner, not like we have down here in Tampa. And Frank and Bob, you know what I'm talking about, and Don too. You know, they drive the fans away, but Arthur Blank, he gave the fans a $99 season ticket to pack to Georgia Dome. He's on the fan side. But down here, these guys are not on the fan side. They're on no one's side down here. I hate to say that.
Well, now that the cow's gone, they want to close the barn door finally, and they're going to offer $35 tickets at $17.50 for kids. And the upper level from X on up to the top are the tickets are dropping from $75 to $35.
Well, I think they have to, Frank. You know more than we do the fact that you can't continue to go in the National Football League. First of all, you have the contract on the line. We'll talk about that in a minute now that the Players Association has instituted that lawsuit. But the other thing is you just can't have a city like Tampa Bay with 35 and 40,000 in a 70,000-seat stadium.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing in Oakland, California, where nobody cares. The 49ers are across the bay.
Right.
And, but in Tampa, Florida, you can't have 35,000 people at a game. I mean, there's no reason for it.
No. And, you know, and the sports authority has already told them, you either fill those seats or you're not going to split anything in the revenues next year.
Right.
Mm.
So that's why they're doing it. It's not out of the business acumen that they have or the goodness of their heart.
You know, they had to be threatened first, right, Frank?
They had to be threatened. And you know what? The shame of it is when you look at next year's schedule, they were lucky to get 10 games in this year. I don't see them getting 10 games in next year. I don't care. I mean, I have a lot of respect for Raheem Morris. I think he's a good man.
You too.
Personally, I think he's a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
But when he starts going up against some pretty tough teams next year, I don't see the fans coming for it.
It'll be interesting because you're right. They'll get a much tougher schedule next year than they had this year based on their where they wound up. But that's going to be tough. But, you know, if he can have a good draft like he had last year and bring some people along more quickly, he did not really have a good record against winning teams, teams that had a winning record. And he did play Atlanta very tough. He should have won one of the two Atlanta games, especially the one they were ahead in the fourth quarter by 10 points when the guy run back the kickoff for a touchdown.
Right.
And so he should have won that one. But he did not have a good record against teams with a winning record.
No. And, you know, coming out and saying that Rondae Barber will be back, he should have told Rondae Barber because Rondae Barber was on TV yesterday on Channel 10 News saying that he wasn't sure he was coming back.
Oh, is that right?
He was in paper at 6 o'clock in the morning saying, yeah, Rondae was coming back.
Wow. Oh, boy. 35
hey,
years
guys,
old.
While we have I talk about Tampa sports, Tom, you may be well aware of this, but and I know Butch is, but the local sports station in Tampa Bay let go a longtime employee last Thursday.
Oh,
a guy that probably is, he was the best on the station. He was one of the only reasons I would listen to the station anymore. Whitney Johnson was let go by WDAE.
Good friend of mine in a program, too.
Yeah, that's going to have a big impact on WDAE, if you ask me.
What was the reason?
Was
just the fact he was making too much money or cut back in salary, or was there a reason for it?
From what I'm hearing, it was cut back in salary. Yeah, but they're saying, we're going in a different direction. But the guy, he could host the show. I mean, he was a sports update guy, but he also hosted shows when people were sick.
Right.
He did all the covered every single game. I mean, Lightning, Buccaneers, Rays, and and I know Tommy. I know that Steve Dumeg's a friend of yours, but he really should have been let go before Whitney Johnson was. I mean, this guy, Whitney Johnson's really done nothing. Steve Dumeg has 4 DUIs, and it's an important embarrassment to the radio station, and they allow him on the air. I don't like the guy. So
how could he have 4 DUIs and be? I mean, you should be in jail with 4 DUIs.
You would think.
Yep.
No, really. I thought the law was the first time was X number of days, the second time was 3 months, and the third time, was an extended period of jail. 4 times. I can't even imagine what that is.
It's 3. He's got 4 over. I want to say over a 15 to 20 year period.
Right.
Right.
So that it's every 5 years you get it wipes away. I can tell you though, if he gets a 5th, now he wasn't he beat the rap on this one, but if he gets another one and it's charged as a 5th DUI, he'll lose his license and he'll be going to prison. So regardless, he'll be going to prison.
I don't want to happen to anybody at all.
No, absolutely not.
You don't want to see that happen. Fans, if you want to stay at your sports bars, please get a cab. Please have a designated driver, or just walk to your sports bar, or better yet, don't drink at all.
Well, I just can't imagine somebody, 5 times. That to me is, you can't even give somebody an excuse. One time, maybe it's a youngster, maybe he's 22, 23 or something, and gets himself into a little trouble drinking. But 5 times? That man should not have a license. I mean, there's no question about it. That shouldn't even be talked about. He shouldn't have a license.
Well, it was only – this is his 4th. I mean, not only, but this was his 4th. But if he gets one more, then that would be his 5th. And, regardless whether he was convicted or not, he beat the rap on this, but it's still on his record as that he was pulled over. His big excuse was that he was pulled over in his driveway. which is no excuse at all. I mean, it doesn't. You can't just beat the cop to your house
and
expect that he's going to let you go. You're still in physical control of that vehicle, which even if he was asleep in the with the keys next to him, it's still physical control because he could get up and start that car.
Well, I don't know either one of these gentlemen, but I will say this, that to me, if I had my choice between somebody that had four possible DUIs and I had a guy that had worked and actually done a very good job, there's no question which person would have gotten released.
Yeah,
exactly. I agree.
Yeah, Whitney Johnson is a real good friend of the program. He listens to it, Bob and Frank and Don at the old station. He always listened to it. And he's my baseball buddy. Hey, we all sat there and shot the ball. And when I was sick a couple of times, he always called up to make sure I was okay and that. And then Whitney, if you're listening, you're in my prayers, buddy. And, you know, just hang in there. Whitney had a good philosophy about life, which he still does up there and that. And, you know,
still does, even after getting fired.
You know,
Whitney's
still that great spirit. Yeah. Everybody should have that great spirit up there and that, you know. And Steve Dumick, you know, whatever he does, his personal life doesn't matter to me. And there's, you know, I said, Steve, at the Rays when the playoffs, to Steve, just God bless him, just be careful out there. And I remember a couple of years ago when DAA first got started, and this is a true story, Steve was going to go to WIP, and I said to him, this is when 9-10 went off the air. And I said to him, Steve, why are you going to go to WIP? You're the kingpin down here of sports radio. You'll get something down here. And by George, he got something in, you know, WDAE. And he called me first on the phone and says, Tommy, thank you for the advice. And Whitney will always thank you for the advice. And Rock Rowley, when you think of Tampa Bay sports, you think of radio person. You think of the big dog, Rock Rowley, and Whitney Johnson. And, you know, Whitney is, you know, for me, it was, it was total disappointment. I was total lost about that. Whitney's a good friend and a colleague of this crazy business we know is broadcasting radio, very tough business.
Well, I'm sure he'll hook up with somebody in this area and be back on the air because that to me, as I say, usually there's some kind of justification when you make that kind of move with somebody that's been popular in the area. And I just don't know either one of the two individuals you're talking about. So I can't comment on that.
Well, a good segue with that would be that, and let's break the news tonight.
Yes, sir.
You know, I like to break news. Other than breaking wind, this is the best thing for me. Jim Leavitt is back in football. He signed this afternoon as the linebacker coach for the 49ers.
Oh, how about that?
You've got to be kidding me.
Yep.
Well, he's got he had a settlement on the lawsuit, which was very advantageous. What was it, $2.5 million, I think, plus $750,000, which was almost $300,000. So, and now he's working with the 49ers, so he's back in business.
Yeah, he is.
That's terrific.
Good for him because, Jim Leavitt did for South Florida. He built that program up. And Jim's an emotional guy. I met him once, and everybody says he's a horse's friend. But you can't judge a person book by his cover. You judge what he did on the field. If he didn't hit that kid, we don't know. We don't know yet. But he got the settlement. You know, he's a football person. Thank God he's back where he should be belonging, football. And everybody was placing a thirst to do a certain sport. And Jim Leavitt is to coach football. Like Don, you know, like Joe Paterno has said, God put me on this earth to coach football. I'm not a fashion player like Urban Meyer. I'm just a football coach.
Well,
I come right from Papa Joe's.
Well, it's the same thing as last night and Calipari when he pulled Jones over to the side there. And use some language that was pretty well broadcast, and that was a big story most of the day today. You know, how should they go about this? And Jones said, you know, that he still supported the coach 100%. He did take him out of the game. Did he swear at him? Well, do you think he's going to swear at him when he's in college? You think he didn't hear this before? You know, and they make a big story out of it because And John obviously let fly with the microphones right there.
Oof.
But hey, that happens. That's part of when you're ESPN, you're doing everything live, and you got the coaches and you got all those mics all around the place. I mean, you're going to hear things like that. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Well, he went to the Joe Biden School of Broadcasting. Now, I'm glad you talked about ESPN because I'd like to break another little news bit here.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, it has something to do with your alma mater, sir. Ooh. University of Texas got a 20-year contract from ESPN for 24/7, 24/7, 365 for $300 million.
Boy, oh boy,
yes, football, baseball, basketball, and girls' basketball.
Well, there you are. Well, it's been one of the most successful programs in the country for a long period of time. It did not, and Mac Brown did not have a good year this year, to say the least. It's the poorest year they've had, and I don't know when in terms of their football program. But you're exactly right, Frank. Their men's basketball has been very solid.
Yep.
Their football has been very solid. Their baseball has always been solid.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that much about the girls' basketball program, I must admit. They're probably putting more and more money into that as well. So that's a great contract mm-hmm. for the school.
Yes, it is.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
And speaking of contracts, here's a little ditty that just came off the wire. They are going to make Peyton Manning a franchise player, and his contract will be lifted from $14 million to $82 million with a guarantee of $55 million.
Yeah, I had heard that on Monday or Tuesday. They said that he had to be the franchise player for the Colts, and they ran over the possibilities of the salary. And so that does not surprise me. They pretty much said that on Monday, that was the way it was going to go.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow. I just hope the cooler heads prevail between the players and the owners for football. It's going to kill these advertising revenues. It's going to kill the poor people working these NFL offices and also team offices trying to sell a product right now, which is a very it's a tough product after the season's over with right now. So I hope the coolers prevail. Don and everybody, I went through it in hockey. It was not a pretty picture. Trust me about that.
No, it's not. Sean Clayton was on ESPN. It was yesterday morning I heard it. And he seemed to think that there would be a lot of feathers ruffled early on in March, but he thought they would come to some type of agreement, probably around the first week or second week of April, and that there's just so much money on the table, and the problem is that the owners, first of all, they want the 18 games. That's number one, and they also want the players to take a cut, and at the same time, they're talking about this new contract that's possibly going to be signed with ESPN for billions of dollars, as well as the contracts they have now with CBS, NBC, and Fox. I mean, I just don't know how the owners can cry poor mouth when, they're taking all this money from the radio and television rights. It just doesn't make sense to me that they could go more than a couple, two or three or four weeks beyond that the 3rd of March that's supposed to be, that's when the contract runs out, the 3rd?
Yes.
Yeah. I just don't think they can go more than a month without getting it settled because, yourself, every one of the teams that we've ever been associated with, as soon as the season's over, they want to start collecting your money for the season tickets for the next year.
Yep.
And then they put it in the bank and they get all the interest on it. Well, it's your money. And,
right.
How many people are going to buy season tickets before they know there's going to be a season?
That's right. Great, great, great point. Because, the average John Doe, especially down here in Tampa, says, well, Bucks were 10-6. My agent called up for season tickets, and he's going to say to the agent, is there a football season next year? He's going to say, yeah, but says, no, they're still arguing right now. And then the poor Buccaneer ticket representative is not selling the ticket. He's getting pressured by his boss. His boss is pressured by his boss. It's like the domino effect coming down to hit the sales representative in the office and pressure the fan to buy the tickets.
Yeah,
well, there's a caveat to that too, Tommy, because the NFL has already sent letters out to season ticket holders that should they not have a season, they're going to gladly refund the money.
Right.
They're going to pay your money up front now. Yeah.
Wow.
They want the money now, and if they don't have it, they'll refund it. Well, la-di-da to that. It's just like BP's thing. They're going to pay me for the shrimp that I lost.
That is the same thing with that personal seating license. Keep talking about these personal seating licenses, and people just aren't going to. times are tough. You know, there are a lot of people that have a lot of money. Don't misunderstand me.
Right.
But
they're
the people that are sitting in the boxes and sitting. You know, the average guy that wants to go to the game, like you said, Frank, a minute ago, that $35 ticket, you know, may not be a heavy ticket if he has a son and he has to pay $17. Say, what's pay? You know, $52 and then parking and then something to eat. You know, he can get away with going to the game, but you can't tell me they're going to pay $200 or $300 for these tickets, and that the average Joe Blow on the street has this kind of extra money.
No, unfortunately, the ones that do have are stuck with those tickets, end up on Sunday morning standing in front of gate C or D, trying to sell the $100 tickets for $10 just to get cash out of it.
Just to get some money back.
Yeah.
Well, it's. You know, it's, but unfortunately, not unfortunately, fortunately for Roger Goodell and for the National Football League, the ratings have never been higher than they are right now. The playoffs, the regular end of the regular season, yeah, they have some holes. They've got Oakland, they've got Tampa Bay, they've got Carolina. They've got some holes where, you know, they're not selling. Even the Jets, you know, they can say that they sell out, but they sell tickets right up till game time.
Sure.
And as you say, I don't know what they're selling it for, but a lot less than the face value to get the stadium filled up. And so they've got some holes, but at the same time, you know, they're capitalizing while the iron is hot, and they better not have a strike, or that iron may cool off pretty quickly.
Yep.
Whatever happened to days at Franklin Field, just sit on a bleacher, no luxury boxes, no seat licensing. That was the old days. You know, you sit at the Vet Stadium, you sit in your own seat that way. I remember my first trip to Cleveland Stadium. Oh, my God, I got a back on the seat, a no seat licensing program, and you use that seat for day in and for eight games for the Eagles up there. No seat licensing program and that. The NFL has just gone sky high, way over its limits, I think.
Well, if you remember the days of Franklin Field, and you remember that even the owner, Jerry Wallman, used to sit there in the stands with everybody else along with his family.
Right.
In fact,
right.
You may remember the fist fight that he got into with a couple
drunk
players.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Trying to protect his family.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and get fined $10,000, which was unheard of at that time.
Yeah.
Right.
By the league.
Well, look at Al Davis. He fires his coach, Cable, and now he wants to fine him, $175,000 or $150,000, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, then he turned around. You know, we always hear about the legacy of Andy Reid and the influence he had. He hires Hugh Jackman, and the first thing Jackman says is, "I owe everything to John Gruden." Because he taught me everything I needed to know when we coached together at the University of Pacific in 89.
Right.
Wow.
But he's the new guy in Oakland, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, new coach in Oakland.
Yeah.
Well, he'll have the same problem with Al Davis that everybody else has.
Yeah.
Actually,
oh, sure.
Hugh Jackman is the Wolverine in the movies. Hugh Jackson is the new coach of the Oakland Raiders.
Or Jackson, yeah, not Jackson. Yeah, you're right.
Picky.
I got to keep you online. I mean, you're talking about Les Miller last week coaching LSU. Poor Les Miller is listening at home going, "What the hell are you talking about? I'm not coaching anywhere."
No, you're thinking of the band leader. Come on, give me a break here.
That was Glenn Miller.
That's Russ Colombo.
Yeah.
You do the football picks this week, guys. You got two guys.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
We got Roger on the line with us.
We're going to find out about Atlanta. Let's get him on here.
Yes, sir.
Oh, he just dropped off.
Yeah, he just dropped off. We didn't talk to him, so he dropped off.
Oh no, he'll come back.
Jesus. Hey, as long as we're talking about Andy Reid,
yes,
it certainly was a merry-go-round up in. In Philly this week, you had Jim Mora saying, I'd like to take a look at the job. At the same time, he's gone out to Denver and was very close to a contract. Now I understand he has a contract with Denver. Yet Dick Geron, who was there on their staff, that they overlooked, and because of that, he's going to go to Cleveland.
Mm.
And they hired Jim Washburn today from the Titans. And they were also looking at Bill Davis. the former Cardinal.
Well, the one thing about these coaches, they do recycle each other. You know, if you get fired as a head coach here, you become an assistant head coach somewhere else, or you become a defensive coordinator or an offensive coordinator. They pretty much take care of their own. And in some cases, that's good, but there should be an opportunity for some of the people that have all the credentials to break in a little bit.
Exactly. It's like recycled laundry bags. It's just, well,
I'm glad you brought that up, too, Don, because Josh McDaniels got a job today. Oh. He's the new Cards offensive coordinator.
Yeah, well, that's what happened.
Rams.
Rams, rather, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, Don, you know, Roger here. I was talking to Tom earlier about Jim Washburn, fellas, and I told Tom the story I heard Peter King talk about on Sirius NFL Radio today about Washburn. And then Derek Boyko's email came out about Washburn, and this has the most detailed resume of any assistant coach I've ever seen the Eagles come out with. But as I was telling Tom, and Tom, you love this story, didn't you, about what this guy does?
It's just unreal.
It is. What he does is what Peter King said, every year after the season, he gets the videos of sacks on every game, every team, every sack throughout the league for the whole year. And then he breaks it down, and he sits down with his lineman and goes through every sack to dissect exactly how each one was made. And he's 61 years old. He's been with Tennessee for, I think, 12 years. I was telling Tom, I don't know whether you fellows know it, assistant coaches with Tennessee, they only get a year-to-year contract. So that's why he was able to get out of it and just get a lateral, basically, to go to the Eagles. But I'll tell you, and Don, you probably remember. Remember when Jim Johnson and Andy Reid came? The guy that was the defensive line coach was Tom Brannon or something like that.
Right.
And then he retired, and Andy brought a guy in, or Jim Johnson. I forget his last name, but it was Pete. And he had been a legendary line coach, I think, at LSU, but never in the NFL. And I'm thinking, here's a guy like – he already retired for like a year or so from the college game, but the guy was another great defensive line coach. And, of course, now he's in his, I guess, upper 60s, so he retired 2 years ago. Rory Seagrass comes in, who was the special teams coach after John Harbaugh. He didn't do a very good job there, and, of course, he didn't do a very good job with the line. But Tom and I were talking about this earlier. What's the name? I don't know how to pronounce it. It's like Trezak or something like that. The guy that was Ray Rhodes is one of his defensive coaches. He's now with the Packers.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't think of it. I agree with you. Ray Rhodes.
It's like TGURAC. Isn't that, Frank, isn't that what it is?
Please, Bob? Yeah.
It's something like Trezak or something like that.
Trezak, yeah. I think that's who's going to be the coordinator. They have to wait till his season ends. And what I also heard driving back from the hospital, my wife had surgery on Monday, was on the NFL Network, they were saying that Mora is staying in television.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he turned down Denver and the Eagles.
How about that?
I might have been Sam in the Daily News were saying that the reason that he was going to stay was because he promised his kids that they'd have some stability. They're with the teenage years now,
right.
And that's like where he was born, I guess, even though they had never lived there in his coaching career. But they love Seattle, and so he's going to stay in television. So he took his name out of the running.
Well, tell us about this Atlanta team. I want to know what happened down there because,
yes.
I mean, I never saw a team in the playoff collapse like they did.
Donna,
code blue, Atlanta. Atlanta.
You're right. It was like Grant coming through Atlanta's right.
Oh, my God.
I'll tell you something. It was absolutely the worst performance that I've seen every Falcons game here for 3 years. Saw a number of them when the Eagles played them. You know, down here, I came down to see them before that. Saw them, at, you know, in Philadelphia. But I'll tell you, it was an absolute shambles. And it, I think, just totally unprepared. I don't know what happened, but I also have to give Green Bay a lot of credit.
Yeah, but
I also
Roger, we saw Green Bay play the Eagles the week before. I mean, I'm not saying Green Bay played a great game against Chicago. They played a great game against the Eagles, but both of those teams made a game of it. Here were the Falcons with 2 weeks to prepare, everybody healthy. And, I mean, they just almost never showed up.
You're exactly right. And that's exactly what Mike Smith said. I'm totally embarrassed. I was telling Tom, you know, the worst part, and we don't ever see this that often, the personal side. You know, I saw Mike Smith's wife, his mother, his daughters, you know, a young girl, I guess about 8, 9 years old. And, you know, they're all crying afterwards. And that's what you really don't see because – you know, we take it, you know, the players, they weren't that emotional. A couple of them were emotional in the locker room, but pretty much they're getting their money. You know, yeah, they wanted to win. It's great if you win, but the sun's going to come up the next day. But it was a disgrace. It was a disaster. It was totally awful. But I will say this, too, going back to the Eagles game, if Vic's pass at the end of the game's about 4 inches higher, or David Akers kicks those 2 field goals, we're not even talking about the Packers going against the Bears. That was an Eagles win.
But the other thing was, Roger, that the thing that was most disappointing to me, and we saw it a couple of times in the weekend games this weekend, the fact that when you knew that pass that Vic threw was going to be that short, even if you have to tackle the defender, I don't care whether you beat his arms down, whether you tackle him, I don't care what you do. You have to become a defensive player. You cannot let him intercept that ball.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. And he didn't. And that's what a player's taught from the time he's a kid. At least
exactly. You've got to get an offensive pass interference call against you, but you can't let that guy, with that little time in the game, you've got to stop him from catching the ball.
Well, the thing that amazed me about Rodgers, you know, and you hear so many good, so many accolades about him, but the thing that really impressed me was the way he was able to get away from not have a sack and get away from
right.
the tackler. And, I mean, he showed me a lot more athleticism than I thought, but I also, I think there were 2 other games that I made notes that the tackling was not crisp for the Falcons during the season. And, you know, some people are saying, well, they were lucky that they won some games. They were. I mean, the Tampa Bay game, they could have very easily have lost.
Well,
you know?
As we said earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there were other games, too, where they were very fortunate, but they did win. But, I mean, it wasn't that they didn't have the crowd at their, with them, because I'll tell you, that dome was rocking. And but it was just their defense, I have to tell you, is suspect. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they had a lot of success with the rotation of the defensive line, which I'm a big proponent of, and they were using 10 guys. Now, are there better players in the league than the 10 they have? Yeah, there are some. But the thing is, I think that rotation, and I think that was with the injuries the Eagles had, I think that was one of their downfalls. They did not have the depth on the defensive line that they've had in the past.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what Rodgers does this week, because if you go back, well, first of all, the game itself, if you go back and see how many times a team has played 3 consecutive games on the road. Now, you can look at the Giants. You can look at the Oakland Raiders the year they beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl. But there are, I think, only 3 teams that have ever come out and had to play three games on the road before the Super Bowl and won, the Giants being one of them. And so that's even though Green Bay is playing maybe the best football right now of anybody, at least up to this point, can they continue that when they go into the Soldiers Field this coming Sunday? The second thing is, if you look at Rodgers, the last five games against Green Bay, his quarterback rating is only 86%. And the other thing is that he's thrown like five interceptions in those last five games. So he has not had a great history against the Bears and the Bears' defense.
Well, you're right. And, you know, Don, another point is on the flip side on the AFC, the same thing. If the Jets beat Pittsburgh, they will have won three games in a row.
That's
on
right.
The road.
You're right.
You know, to get, hey, listen, you know, there's a lot of – you hear a lot of talk about what's going on with the Jets and the national people. Some are criticizing Rex Ryan. Isn't this the rebirth of Buddy Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
exactly. It is. except they got out of the first round.
Yeah. They got out of the first round. But I'm thinking, you know what? He's saying the same thing that he used to say
yes,
with Don at the Ribbit on Monday night.
You're exactly right. Yeah. It's a carbon. Rex is a carbon copy of his father. He says exactly the same thing. He draws all the attention away from the players and on himself and all the controversy. And let's face it. You know, he really put his reputation on the line this week, first of all criticizing Belichick, saying that they're going to win the game. I mean, it all turned out to be almost like Joe Namath saying he was going to win the Super Bowl, but winning it. And that's what Rex did. But the only thing is now, this is his third consecutive year of the championship game, and he said himself on Monday with the press conference that, you know, he can't stand another going to the championship game 3 years in a row, once with Baltimore and now twice with the Jets. And
that's
not coming
right,
away
yeah.
with a win. So we'll see how he does against the Steelers this week.
Well, you know what I
yep.
thought was that what else was interesting? Rob Ryan's the new defensive coordinator for the Cowboys.
Right.
And I remember one of Buddy's great lines when the schedule came out. He said, the team will win eight, the fans will win two, and I'll take care of the Cowboys.
Well, I think the one good thing about that, to be honest with you, he was with Cleveland, of course, this year.
Right.
And
yeah.
He's not in the same conference with Rex. I think that's good. I think if he had been, you know, if he had been in the AFC rather than the NFC, I think it would have been a lot more competitive. But they're gonna meet each other infrequently unless they get to the playoffs.
Well, you're also going to have the Harbaugh boys now, too.
Correct. That's right.
Yes. You know, facing each other. It's the AFC, NFC, just like you were mentioning.
Same thing. Exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys, we have a mystery caller from our past, but certainly
from prison?
More Tommy's past. We have a mystery guest on the line with us.
Okay.
Let's see if Tommy can guess who this is. Go ahead.
Let's do a DNA test. Make sure it's not his.
Hey, Tommy.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. It's a blast from your past, but we're going to see if you can figure out who it is.
I know he never had a girlfriend, so it can't be that.
Hey, what? I like her voice.
Well, I've known Tommy probably a good 10, 11 years.
Katie.
Tom?
There you go.
It's Katie.
It's
yep.
Katie.
That's right.
Hey, Katie, how you doing?
Katie, welcome to the world of internet here.
Where's Katie? Our producer, our engineer, our everything at the old station.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that was Katie when we used to call in at the old station.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Oh, she was terrific. What a sweetheart.
Oh, she's a great person,
oh,
that's
thank
for
you.
Sure.
We're glad to have you aboard. We had a lot of fun over there, so... well, we've had a lot of fun over here as well, but it's nice to talk to you again.
Yes.
You certainly carried the ball for us while we were over at the station. You got all the calls on the right numbers for us.
It was my pleasure. Yours was one of my favorite shows to do.
Oh, thank you. How's your dad doing, by the way?
He's hanging in there. He's doing all right.
Oh,
we're putting the pieces back together slowly but surely.
Good. Miss Valerie doing good, too? Or?
She seems to be.
Okay.
Enough said on that one.
Katie, are you still at the station?
No, I am no longer at the station.
You didn't sound like you were too encouraged.
I left the station and started working at a daycare.
Oh, good for you.
Kind of got laid off, so I've been doing a bunch of babysitting for some of the families that I met at the daycare.
Oh.
And in 8 weeks, I will officially have finished my master's work.
Great news.
Just don't go back to Japan, please.
stay here, please.
I promise. Although
God,
my mother would like
back.
Me to teach abroad, and I heard Taiwan and Korea are hiring, so you never know.
Oh, please stay here, take care of your family. You know that, Katie. We love you.
Oh, I know.
We love you. I still remember that Wednesday show. It was so funny, right? We used to, when Don's come to the station, we used to go in there. It was just fun to be with Katie producer. That was a highlight of my week, coming in there, seeing Katie ready to do the show. What are you talking about this week? Well, we don't know. We're just going to wing it.
When we went on the road, she got all the telephones and lined up for us and got the call squared away. It was great. We had a great time at that sports bar. And I understand it's opening up again now.
Is it really?
It's what somebody told me.
Oh, my God. You're kidding. Road trip.
If you're babysitting, I'll tell you where there's some good money, and that's to get close to some of these athletes. And, you know, like I know Courtney Baker when she was in college. You know, Dan Baker, of course, the Phillies and the Eagles PA announcer. His daughter's now a reporter and an anchor out in Quad Cities, Illinois. When she was in college in the summertime, Billy Wagner, she became, when he was with the Phillies, she went with the kids to the All-Star game on a private plane,
wow.
And they were flying her all over the place.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, there's a career there for you, hon.
It's also,
I love it.
She gets certified as a nanny, and that they pay anywhere from $85,000 to $100,000 if you want to be an on-pair. You live on premises, and everything else is provided for you.
Yep. And there's a lot of need for it right now. Every you feel, just look at everybody you know that they're two family. Both parties in the family are working. Everybody's working, so you have to have somebody take care of the kids.
Right.
Oh, hey, Katie,
and
Parker's
I do that very, very well.
Hey, Katie, get to this park for you. Bugsy is parked in the background for you.
Aw, hey, Bugsy.
You remember Bugsy, right?
I do. He was helping you with some of your commercials back in the day. Ding dong.
Were any ones we could understand or the ones we couldn't understand?
It depended on how much both Tommy and Bugsy had to drink that night.
Yeah. It was one that was X-rated.
I came out to see
an X-rated Avon commercial. Tommy did it.
We've replayed that so many times in the station, and everybody, it was unbelievable.
I remember those wines, and I couldn't do the show. We were laughing so hard.
Hey, listen, as long as the sponsor's happy, as long as the sales are coming in, right?
That's right.
Well, Tommy used the product. Tommy used the product, so it was all right.
Tommy and I always had a great time. We even took a time to take a dip in the ocean during a few remotes.
Tell Don and Roger about that remote, Katie. You're a big part of it. Tell them about that. That was funny. You got to hear this story.
Saturday sports show remote live on the beach. And I was doing the board operating at location, controlling all the knobs and dials. And we get to the commercial break. Tommy and I look at each other and go, let's go for it. Grab each other by the hands. Sprint off down to the end of the beach, jump in the water, splash each other a little bit, then go sprinting back and make it right before our commercial break ended.
Thank God for CNN News. It was 5 minutes. We timed it perfectly, 4 minutes and 58 seconds.
If people already knew how much fun we had in this business, they'd all want to get in it.
Well, that's why whenever you hear MacArthur Park on the radio, you know what's going on, right?
I used to love the Wednesday nights, and I miss the, you know, I think Katie and everybody, I miss the Wednesday nights for me going down there to see everybody, to see Frank and Don and Roger and at Cherry's. We had better shows at dinner time than we do on the radio at the time.
Yeah.
You had the biggest desserts I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, well, I had to get the salad and make up for the dessert down there. We had some of the best shows. We're sitting at dinner time. We should have taped that and said, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the great things when in the old days doing the remotes, you know, because everything was so different. And, you know, I was just looking today at the ratings, Don, in Trenton.
Right.
And, you know, the old AM stations, they're not even listed. And where it used to be, they were at the top of the list, WH
right.
and also BUD.
And TTM.
And TTM. And, I mean, they were the good days. I mean, the fun that we used to have. And I think about Donna. I mean, I start laughing. I'll wake up in the middle of the night thinking about what with Don and Buddy at the Ribbon. And I mean, standing there and like during a break, some of the comments that are made and Buddy working the audience, I mean, I still am laughing and it's 20 years later.
You know, the one thing that you said, Roger, and I think Tommy pretty much agrees with this, Frank and Bobby haven't been associated with it quite as long as we have. But the one thing that you said consistently 30 years ago, that local radio stations should do local broadcasting. They should not be... There's no way the local, you know, the local 1,000-watt, 5,000-watt stations, there's no way they should take syndicated programming because the people in that town deserve to have talent that knows the town they're in, talks about the town they're in, whether it's politically, whether it's educationally, whether it's traffic, whether it's weather, and having 7, 8, 10 hours of syndicated programming is absolutely worthless to the people that live there.
Thank you for saying that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, look at today, the station that Don and I are familiar with, and you know, up in at Merle Reese's vice president of BCB. It's all local, and I mean, they do well. Bill Redner does a great job of selling the high school games. And they even now put some of the high school games on the College of New Jersey station and the Rider station. And, I mean, but that's what people want. They want the local. And I can tell you, the station that I'm working with, it's a local station in Gainesville, and we did a lot of high school ball. I did the Falcon show. But I went out and sold it during the fall, the high school games, and we got new sponsors. The people are happy. The sponsors are happy because you make it personal. You know, when you're doing a spot, like you were talking, Tom, you know, when you kid around with things. But let me tell you, the sponsors like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's an association between you, the station, and the listener. And you just don't get that when you take in all this, you know, national broadcast of things. You don't get any, there's just nothing that relates to your city, to your audience. It just doesn't happen.
Oh, exactly.
Well, when I was...
The only thing is it's cheap. You don't pay for it. That's the whole... I mean, let's face it. That's what it's all about with these little stations. Now they get all this programming for free.
Yep.
Yeah.
By the computer, so you lose all the people who used to work there because it's all computer run.
You're right, Katie. That's right.
I remember that. She said everything after 9 o'clock, after that one show, back, put on the bird.
Yeah. Well, no, she was flipping you know, I can
bird.
Remember when I was doing the weekly show at WHWH in Princeton when it was on Witherspoon Street, and I'd be driving to the station on 206. And, Don, you probably remember there was like a furniture accessory store right there before you turn coming south on 206 to go to Witherspoon at that light. I forget the name of it, but they were a big sponsor on the Nassau Broadcasting. And I would talk about, what a beautiful display in the window and what I saw and this, that. Johnny Mars, who was the owner of the station, he came up to me one night. He says, they love you. because you're talking about not only doing the spot, but you're telling what's in there and getting people interested to go over and see what's in the window.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have to do, but you don't do that anymore. You know,
it's all
different. It's all
natural.
Well, another time, guys, like when I do the show for the Lightning, I seem enthusiastic about for one of our supporters for the Lightning show, and we did a survey about 2 years ago. We found out 15% of the people who go to the hockey games listen to the Lightning show who attend the games. For a big chunk of the state, that's fantastic for the people.
Well, it is, and you know, Tom, it's great that you have those shows.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know, because I think I've said before, the University of Georgia football team, their post-game show is like 3.5-4 hours.
Sure.
And the Falcons, when I get to the off of Marta into my car, the post-game show's over.
And let's face it, look how much money they make on the pre- and post-game shows, whether it's the national shows or the local shows for the stations, for the local teams. You know, that's where the real bread and butter comes. They pay for the rights, and they try to break even there, but they try to make all the money on the pregame shows and the postgame shows. And, Roger, as you said, not only we did have a lot of fun at the Ribbit Restaurant, which was a ribs restaurant in Philly right there downtown Philadelphia. But, I mean,
awesome restaurant.
I mean, it was a great restaurant, and the place was packed every single Monday night when Buddy was there, and you couldn't beat it. I mean, it was more people listen to Buddy Ryan's show, or I don't know if they still do it now because we're not there. But I mean, it was incredible how many people who followed the team came to the restaurant or listened to every single show.
Well, you know where they do Andy Reid's show is at the Chickie and Pete's,
yeah.
You know, down at Packer Avenue, and
right.
It's packed. And,
wow.
And they do it, and it reminds me so much of the Ribbit, you know, just the ambiance and everything else.
Right.
And it was interesting. I said to Pete Scirocchi, I asked him one time, I said, like, who's Chickie? I figured, you know, it's a partner. And he says, that's my mom. So, but, you know, he's got a whole chain of restaurants now, and he's done very well. But uh-huh. I said he and I were talking about it one of the first times I was ever at the one on Packer Avenue. And I said, hey, Pete, I said, you've come a long way from when you had the first restaurant in the Vet. He says, yeah, remember those days? And I said, yeah, we used to, remember, Don, we went to the press conferences for the coaches right there at Chickie and Pete's.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely. By the way, it's 48-44 Sixers at halftime, boys.
All right.
You know, you got to give them a lot of credit, don't you? I mean, Doug Collins has done a great job keeping them competitive.
Hello. We said that at the top of the show. You came on a little late tonight, but we were talking about exactly what Doug Collins has done. It was very shaky at the outset, but he's sort of stabilized the ship, and they've been playing much, much better.
Well, I think they're, what, 4 games under 500 or five,
right.
I looked the other day?
Yes.
Yeah, 4, I believe.
Yeah.
And the poor Cavaliers in Cleveland, oh, boy, it's going to be – Rogers could be like the old Ted Steppen years up there. I hate to say it out there. So they're counting days that Indians baseball gets underway. So,
well, you're right. And you know what else, Tom? We were talking about it today. I don't know whether you mentioned it at the top of the show. Paul Holmgren just signed a 3-year extension as general manager of the Flyers.
Wow, that was for Philadelphia Flyer fans. That's a great move. And the guy who's on
move.
All summer long, Andre Mazaros, Roger, and everybody. He's plus 22, and that
wow.
I have to talk. I got to talk to the Flyers writers. Is this guy for real or what? Because last year with the Lightning, he was on the ice, and Rick Peckham would say, "Oh, puck gets by Marzar, score."
Sixers. I just took a look. Sixers are 17-23. They're 6 games under 500. But at one time, they were way down. They were 10 games under 500.
Oh.
Yeah.
They were really playing just miserable basketball, and they. And as I say, Doug Collins, as the season has rolled along, has put things together, and they're playing much, much better basketball now. And even the games they've lost, they're much more competitive in.
Hey, Tom, when do the Lightning play at Phillips Arena next, you know, offhand?
Tomorrow night.
Oh, it's tomorrow night. I was going to say, you know, you guys welcome to come up. We got plenty of room in the house. And, you know, we'll all go to the game together.
Will you send your plane down for us?
Hey, listen, anytime. You know, Rita's in the hospital. She doesn't come home till Friday.
Oh, well, what's wrong with her?
Road trip. She had another knee replacement.
Oh, jeez almighty.
Yeah, she had one 3 years ago.
I think you should send your plane because it's a, what is it, a 12-seater? 12-seater or 14?
Hey, listen, I know you have one.
Well, that'd be great. Brian Griezmann says, oh, no, Tommy, what are you doing up here?
Let me tell you, I have a senior citizen. I get a $15 token to go on the bus anywhere around Sarasota. 15 cents. I can handle that.
Don, you just beat the system. Gentlemen, remember when the Flyers won the Cup? The most important thing was did the fans beat the SEPTA system, and most of them did.
You're right there. Well, let's pick the weekend games, Tommy. You've got to be ready for this.
Oh, gee, okay. I think I won 1 week, gentlemen, last week, so all right.
I can't pick any winners.
All right.
Let's start with Frank and Bobby this week. Maybe they'll give us the lead.
That sounds good.
We got Katie still with us, so.
Okay. Katie, let Katie pick some.
Pick for us. Here we go.
Go ahead, you start, Katie.
You know I never know anything to pick. I just close my eyes and point next Bugsy for a guy.
Yeah, we get him right.
Yeah, he does get it right. That's why I listen to him.
Well, Katie, a couple of times we used to do that at the station. You hit the jackpot a couple of times that way. You remember that? Because I couldn't do it, Don couldn't do it, and Bob and Frank couldn't do it, and Katie wins every week. So I mean,
blind luck sometimes. Not enough for me to go to the track and try to win anything.
But you beat us. That's the main thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, Katie. If you win this week, Roger will send his plane down to pick you up.
There you go.
Roger, what time's your plane take off? I could go to the office for a little bit. Take off like 4:15. I can make face off. All right.
That's right.
Oh my!
You guys do your picking, and I'll just do your listening. And I'll just keep track to see who was right and who was wrong.
Okay, it's your turn to pick, Katie. Katie, since we're being gentlemen on this radio show, you pick. It's just it's one team or the other team. That's all you do. It's for entertainment purpose only, Katie.
That's like right. We only have two games, so you can't make many mistakes.
Go ahead, Katie. You lead off.
What are my choices again?
All right, first, your early game is Green Bay at Chicago.
I'll go Chicago.
Okay. All right, who else is going to pick? I guess Bob and Frank again.
I'm going with Green Bay by a large margin.
Oh,
so am I. I'm going with Green Bay, too, by a large margin.
Ooh, okay.
Tommy?
I'm going to go with the Bears at home game. Bears are fired up. Lovie Smith is fired up. The only thing is Jay Cutler, you know, I mean, it's interesting. Great rivalry. I think the Bears are the Packers one.
I'll tell you, I loved it when Katie picked it. I was hoping you were going to go the other way because you're never right. I got to go with the Bears. I'm going to go with my earlier numbers that Rodgers has not done well against the Bears in the last five games, and they're playing the third game on the road. Tough game against the Bears in Green Bay. They just did win that one. I'm going to go with the Bears.
Okay. All right. All right, Katie, your last game.
I'm going with Green Bay.
I'm sorry. Jeez.
I think you said Green Bay.
Yeah. Yes, sir, I did.
Uh-oh. All right. Bob, we'll lead off the picks for the final week of the championship season until Super Bowl.
All right. The New York Jets at the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm going to go J-E-T-S, Jets.
Ooh.
I'm going to go Jets. I think Rex Ryan's going to do it this time. I think they're on a roll. I think Rex Ryan is going to win this game.
Okay. Well,
I agree.
I'm going to go with the Jets.
Okay.
I'm going with them, too.
Katie?
I'm going to go with Pitt because I have a lot of relatives up there that if I don't, they're going to come down and kick my booty.
Well, we got everybody going with the Jets except Katie. That means we're probably all wrong.
I'm going to go with the Jets because Pittsburgh's my big rival, and I had to talk to Brian Malone. after yesterday's game and says, I got to go against you. He says, I know you're a Browns fan. You're going with the Jets. I said, you're damn right I'm going with the Jets.
Yeah.
It was funny, guys. He's
got money on the Jets because today on the ESPN he was talking that you never know what Ryan is going to throw against you. And he sends so many different schemes in. So that even though they're practicing hard, as everybody's saying, I still think that they're afraid of him.
Ooh.
Well, I'll tell you, I have to give Rex an awful lot of credit. He really adapted his defense between that big loss at Green Bay with the Patriots and then coming in for this playoff game and completely readjusting his defense and his schemes. He did a terrific job for this one game. Whether he can do it again against Pittsburgh is yet to be seen, but I just think right now they're playing very, very well, and I'm going to go with them.
Well, Don, you know, you saw what his game plan was last week, and that was go in there and get in Brady's face.
Yep.
And with Ben Roethlisberger, it'll be the same way. The only difference is Roethlisberger is not as – I mean, I know that Brady's coming off an injury from 2 years ago, but Roethlisberger is just a big, goofy guy. He's not going to – you know, he's not going to run around. He's going to be able – you know, Harrison's going to be able to get in there and get him if he wants. Harrison. Revis will be able to shut down Mike Wallace. And, you know, the Clay Matthews will be able to get in there and get to Roethlisberger and also shut down, I think, Clay Matthews against Rashard Mendenhall. I think that's a great matchup to watch this weekend.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I think there are a lot of – I think just the fact they haven't played since week after Pearl Harbor for a championship game in 1941, I mean, just the history of these two teams playing against each other. I mean, 1941 to 2011, that's unbelievable.
Yep. It is. You know, talking about Brady, I heard on the NFL Network earlier that he played with a stress fracture in his foot all year.
Mm.
Wow.
Oh, boy, that's shocking.
I also heard that his barber went bankrupt because he didn't get a chance to cut his hair all season. Freaking hippie.
Wasn't going to get a haircut until the season was over. He went along with that.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. You know, he dropped more balls this game than he has in his whole career, and he went 11 weeks without a interception, and he had four this weekend. So, you know, you can't blame that on the foot.
Well, you know, he's 33 years old now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just wondering if we're going to be able to see the productivity continue at the level that he has had in the past. For the next year of the year, because I think this is the time you start to see a little bit of a decline.
Yeah. Well, I think at the same time, you just talked about, Manny getting that big contract, and, you know, look at him at his age.
Right? Well, that's true.
Yeah.
And, I feel sorry for Donovan McNabb because I think that his career is in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, well, definitely in Washington.
Great
I can't
point.
Imagine he's going to be in Washington next year.
You know, this week, you know, with Brady throwing the way he was and throwing up, you know, a lot higher than he really should, the New England Patriots receivers took more balls to the face than Elton John.
I can't touch that one.
I hope not, Tommy.
Oh, that's good.
See, Katie, we still have fun on a Wednesday night. So.
It's true. It's so true. Wednesday night was always my favorite night of the week.
Even with Big John?
I forgot she was still there. Damn it.
Katie, remember the drawing board we used to do?
Yes.
We should play tic-tac-toe on that drawing board. I remember swinging around those chairs up there, and that used to be fun to do, swinging. How many times you go around that chair swinging around?
We have like a record. I think you managed to go around like 32 times without touching anything at one point.
Well, yeah, I try to remember that. Yeah, then the next week I bang my foot up on the Oh, my God. So we had so much fun down there, Katie, and that. Oh, my God. So, yeah, we have a good time up there. But, like I said before, I miss the camaraderie, everybody having dinner together and going out to see yourself. Here's who's coming on the show, this and that. I miss that already.
I know, me too.
Yeah, that's one of the great things. We always had a chance to have dinner first and then do the show for an hour and a half or 2 hours or whatever it turned out to be. And because you never knew whether the person following you is going to come in on time or whether he's going to come in. So some weeks we might do the show for an hour. Some weeks we might do it for three.
So
I wonder if we even got out on the air because I can never get it on the radio.
The guy following us was an NBA expert, right? I never saw a guy rip or read in my life like this. He ripped the paper out and started reading right from the paper on the radio thing.
Yeah.
Yay. Thanks all kinds,
I'll
gentlemen.
Never forget the night that Katie came in. We're in the middle of giving one of these great dissertations about a fight.
Oh,
Katie came in and says, well, we might as well put the lights out. I said, why? She said, the tower's down.
It's like we've been off the air for the last half hour.
Yeah.
Hey, Frank, maybe you can tell me. We were having a discussion at dinner tonight, and Ray Gavelin, the bowler putz, did he have a nickname? I don't remember a nickname for him. They said, oh, he definitely had a nickname. I don't remember Gavelin having a nickname.
No, I don't remember.
I don't remember.
What was it again?
Kid Galloway.
No, I
don't remember it either. Everybody was talking about his dinner tonight. I mean, I saw him fight any number of times. Yeah, he had that bolo punch was his. That was really his forte. And but I saw him fight Ike Williams. I saw him fight Ike Williams two or three times. But and he fought the welterweight division. Then he moved up to the middleweight. Was never big enough to fight as a middleweight. But he was a great fighter, but I just never remembered him having a nickname. They seem to think that he did, but I don't remember it.
Who was the fighter, Don?
Kid Gavelin.
Was that Kid Gavelin?
Yeah, I thought it was
Kid
Gavelin.
Yeah. That was the nickname, Kid.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all I remember.
That's all I remember too. But I don't know.
Kid Gavelin, his actual nickname was the Cuban Hawk.
What it was?
Yes, the Cuban Hawk.
Okay.
The Cuban Hawk. Okay, I never heard that.
No, they were sure that he did, but I didn't remember that at all.
Yeah, his actual real name was Gerardo Gonzalez, and they nicknamed him Kid Gavelin. Apparently there was another fighter named Gerardo Gonzalez in that era.
Right.
But he fought, like you said, he fought like Williams, Ralph Jones.
He fought everybody.
Yeah, he had a Hall of Fame career.
Absolutely.
108 fights, 30 losses. I'm sorry, 108 wins, 30 losses.
Wow.
So
I saw him fight a lot of times. I saw him fight like Williams twice.
Wow.
Was that at the Blue Horizon?
No. Madison Square Garden.
First
time I saw Ike Williams fight when he fought for the title was at the Memorial Stadium, JF Kennedy Stadium in Philadelphia.
Wow. Because I'll tell you, the Blue Horizon, you talk about a boxing venue,
right,
a historical boxing venue. Unbelievable, that place.
Yep.
Well, you remember they used to have every Friday night, Madison Square Garden. And Kid Gavelin fought most of his fights at Madison Square Garden, and so did Ike Williams fight a lot of it. Of course, Bleaky Palermo was Ike Williams, the biggest mafia guy in the world. Ike Williams' manager.
Yeah, and he was buddies with Eddie Gottlieb back in those days.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, were absolutely.
Yeah. When you talk about the Friday night fights, I mean, that was Don Dunphy, wasn't it?
Bill Corbin and Don Dunphy did the fights. There were the Friday night fights, and there were the Pabst Blue Ribbon fights at St. Nick's Arena in New York. That was every Monday night. Monday night we had the fights at St. Nick's. Friday night we had the fights at Madison Square Garden.
Remember that, yes.
Yeah.
Didn't ABC used to have that, the Friday night fights, and then they had the my favorite show is
NBC,
after that, to make that spare. That was a highlight, trying to sample what these guys making that spare. And of course, you always had Bowling for Dollars on Channel 29.
Right.
Chris Schenkel was longer with that bowling show than any show that he ever did.
That's right. But Don, guys, remember the Bowling for Dollars, right? Channel 29 used to come on around 7 o'clock, right? I remember when some guy, you know, from Mikey's name, I'm so confident I'm gonna throw a strike. The guy threw a gutter ball.
Hey, you know, that bowling show still goes pretty strongly on the weekends. TV-wise, they still do pretty well with that bowling thing.
Oh, my God. I remember that. It used to be on at 7 o'clock after the news was over. I used to hurry downstairs after dinner. I used to watch a bowling show. My parents said, what was so funny? I'm watching these guys throw balls in the gutter.
Hey, Don, who was the guy that you're talking about? Was that Bob Montgomery?
Yes, Bob Montgomery. He was the lightweight champion then.
Yes, yes. And he won the six-round knockout.
At John F. It wasn't called John F. Kennedy Stadium.
Municipal at that point.
Municipal Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 1947. He knocked him out in the sixth round.
You're exactly right.
Wow.
See, now, I haven't lost it totally, boys. I still remember some things.
But, yeah, who was the – Don, you were at Channel 29 doing the sports. Who was the guy – and this was early on when it was, you know, with WIBF, owned by the Fox brothers.
Right.
You know, in Jenkintown. Who was the guy that did that bowling show? It was Dick something.
Dick Shore?
Dick Shore. That's who it was.
Yeah.
Dick Shore.
There you go. See, Tommy knows all these bowling games. He's a bowler watcher.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tom, you know, up in New England, what do they call it, the small bowling balls, that's still a very popular TV show.
Why, no, oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they had Shore doing the bowling, and they had Joe Niagara doing the record hops every Friday night.
Right.
You know, like they had the old days. Unbelievable.
But Dick Shore, I remember that there was one lady who was rolling the ball so bad she had the back door, and she had a strike because the back door hit the 3-4 pocket, all the pins would dink, blink, blink, blink. And Dick Shore said, "Lady, congratulations, you just won $100. And lady jumped up and down for her joy.
You know, that bowling alley was right there in the studios at the Benson East in Jenkintown.
That's exactly where it was. And they had the pool back behind where they did the shows outside. They had the pool right there, you know, behind it. And, the two brothers owned the station. One brother didn't want anything to do with it. The other brother finally sold it to Fox, and he made a lot of money with that. He did it.
Yeah, well, it was William Irvin and Benjamin Fox.
Yep.
And then they had the Fox Pavilion right up the street on
That's where Ward Taylor's were. That's where we got all our clothes. We came down to work. We came down to work at 5 o'clock. We went into Lord & Taylor's. We got all our clothes for the show. And then we were right across the street to the Benjamin Fox Pavilion. And then we had dinner at Stauffer's, which was on the first floor.
Oh? Oh, my God. That's right. It's just coming back to memories now.
When you think about Channel 17, the first studios and offices were out there in Winmore. And I can remember going out on a Sunday night to watch Jack McKinney. Remember, he used to have an audience show on Channel 17.
Oh,
yep.
That's right.
Oh, I did a few shows with Jack when he was over there. In fact, we did I'll never forget it, we did a pre-Super Bowl game with Kaplis quarterbacking from Minnesota, and they were playing Lenny Dawson in the Super Bowl for Kansas City. Hank Stram was the coach then, and I said to Jack McKinney, we did the show, and I said to Jack McKinney, I said, you know, Minnesota's going to win this game. He said, there's no way he can win this game. Cap can't beat anybody. I said, well, you wait. We did a show before that Super Bowl game.
I think Jack McKinney's daughter, isn't she quite a singer? And she sang at the sports writer or the broadcast pioneers?
Yep, she is. You're right.
Uh-huh.
And he got Jack McKinney, for those folks that are listening, he got involved with Devlin's when all the problems in Ireland. Well, it's been Devlin's first name. I can't remember her first name.
Bernadette Devlin.
Oh, my God. He got in there with the Clancy brothers and Bernadette Devlin.
Yeah.
And he became a political analyst then.
Yeah, I remember.
His greatest story.
He had a great show on WCAU, Night Talk.
It was one of the best shows they ever had there. And the other thing was, the best column he ever wrote 49ers play the Philadelphia Eagles on a Sunday afternoon. He went out on a plane with Huey Brown, who worked for the Daily News, Jack McKinney, and Huey Brown, of course, worked for the Bulletin. Everybody, doesn't live to read the Bulletin. And so Jack goes out, gets in the bar, gets drunk, never saw the game. Coming back on the plane, he gets Huey Brown's notes. Writes a whole column, one of the greatest columns he ever wrote about a Philadelphia Eagle game. He never saw a play. He never saw a play.
Oh, jeez. Was that comeback? The Eagles were down by 20 the fourth quarter. They won 35-34.
I don't remember which game it was, but I know it was one of the most unbelievable stories. And Hugh Brown at the time was a senior citizen sports writer. And had been with the Bulletin for years and years and years. And Jack McKinney never made the game. And he wrote one of the best pieces about the Eagles 49er game that they ever wrote.
Well, you know, when you talk to some of the old-time sports writers, I mean, it's a real education. Bill Conlon was telling me the story. They were on a media plane, you know, how they, when they go the World Series, they went from coast to coast that they had to, and they'd be in a charter. And he was telling me, he says, you ask Furman Fischer, you know, a former sports editor of the Journal Constitution, about the night on that plane coming from L.A. to New York. And he and another guy, I forget who it was, he told me, I forget the name, they're doing one-arm push-ups at 35,000 feet on the plane. And Furman, when I saw him at a game, I said that. So I said, I heard you were doing push-ups years ago on a plane at 35,000 feet with Joe Doakes. And who told you that? And I said, Bill Conlon. He says, well, let me tell you, he says, nobody was beating me on one-arm push-ups. So the competitiveness was still there years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, the funny thing was, the single most famous Philadelphia story, Jack McKinney's story, is number two, because only the people in the business ever knew about it. But the most famous story was the Philadelphia Inquirer writer. I'm not sure it was the night that Sal Magley pitched a no-hitter, but it was the Phillies and the Dodgers. So the baseball writer, I can't remember his name now, that was writing for the Philadelphia Inquirer, same thing. Went out to the bars, got drunk, didn't see the game. Wrote this terrific story about how all the runs were scored and this and that and the other thing. Sent it into the Inquirer. They printed it the next morning. The only thing he forgot to say was the game was a no hitter. They fired.
That wasn't Alan Lewis, was it?
No, it wasn't Alan Lewis. No, it was the guy before Alan Lewis. But they forgot. He forgot that he never got the news that it was a no hitter, so he didn't put it in the story. They fired him. They never fired McKinney.
Gene Kelly doing a game of the Phillies. It's a drag bunt. It's over the wall.
Oh, you're kidding me. No. Hey, guys, we have to say goodbye. Our sweetheart, our Sports Tonight sweetheart, Katie, anytime you call us up, and we'd love to talk to you anytime next week about your sports thing. You call us up anytime you want. It's always yours. You know that. God bless you.
I know that. And you guys got my number, so feel free to call anytime. If you want to just catch up and do dinner or something,
definitely.
I'm always happy to do that.
Come on the show next
week.
Hey, listen,
you know what? We all ought to, when I come down there, we all ought to get together for dinner.
We'll do that.
We will. Trust me, we will.
We'll do that. Wherever Tommy gets free comps, we'll go.
Great.
Checkers.
Whatever Tommy gives me. At Christmas, we were still wearing Lightning Santa Claus hats this year.
Oh, my God. I remember the funniest story, Katie, about the Wolfman, right? Ray, Katie's father used to own the station. They had a Christmas party up there. So I went down with my date, guys, and here's what happened. They said the DJ called the Wolfman. And he was acting like a wolfman. He says, hey, the dog got on fire.
I know. The dog set himself on fire and had no idea.
What was your date's name? Tommy Harry?
Hey, dog got on fire. You know, he's just like the wolfman. And I lost it almost. Oh, God. Katie, we're going to do this again. in next week. We have a fun time.
Sounds great. Give me a call sometime. Tommy,
take care.
Catch
good to talk to you.
Take care, Katie.
Good to talk to you, Katie. Oh, God.
Take care, guys.
Take care.
Take care.
Hey, Roger, before I forget while you're on there, be sure you tell Rita I said best of luck with that knee operation. I didn't know she was going back in. You hadn't mentioned it.
Yeah, Roger.
Yeah, she went in on. She went in on Monday, and she had it. Of course, she had one 3 years ago. You know, I know Don and Elaine know about it, and so it's a little different this time. Obviously, it's a different hospital too, but different doctor. But she had a tough time yesterday. But then the doctor came, and I ran into him coming out of the parking garage as I was leaving. So I went right back in with them, and. She needed sleep because she hadn't slept in 3 days. I looked at it's amazing. They took all the dressing off. All she has is gauze. She's went from, I forget what it was, 15. She's already at 70 on being able to bend her knee. And I have to tell you an interesting story because this young lady is from up in our old area. She's from Emmaus, you know, outside of Allentown. And she's the physical therapist. Her name is Lynn. She went to school up by RPI in Troy, New York, and I don't know what brought her down here, but she has a nervous condition. Well, we found out what it really is. She had polio as a child, she has overcome this as a physical therapist, and she has been able to get people, and especially older people, out of their chairs, you know, because they're fighting it, you know, after they've had a surgery.
Right.
And I want to tell you, the reason she's so successful is because look at what she's overcome. I mean, I think it's just a great humanitarian story.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, if she's got her to 70% already, she's done a terrific job.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
God bless her.
Because, you know, my granddaughter's a physical therapist and graduate of Jefferson, and, boy, I'll tell you, that's not the easiest thing to do.
Very tough.
You have to be very dedicated to be a physical therapist because Rita was telling me that, I mean, that what the nurses have told her about some of the men. One guy said to Lynn, how can you get me straightened out? You're not even straightened out yourself.
Oh, no.
I mean, you talk about being crude, you know.
Oh,
right,
no.
Right.
Oh,
unbelievable. But I thought I'd relate. It's a great story to see how a young woman from up in, you know, the Philadelphia area, what she's achieved and having a tough time physically, you know, growing up.
Right.
God bless her.
Oh, that's terrific.
Oh, God bless Rita, you know, Roger, God bless your wife, your parents,
yeah,
Mark,
thanks,
family.
Thanks,
and that,
I really appreciate it. And, you know, she'll be in there. As I said, I told all our relatives and my daughter, she's back.
Yeah, Roger, when you come down, we'll hopefully have good weather for you down here.
We're looking forward to it. You know, I'm looking forward, and I can't believe that, you know, what, in less than a month, the pitchers and catchers are going to be there.
Oh, way less than a month. They're going to start. In fact, there was a big story on Jeter. Jeter's going to start working out down here next week.
Wow.
He's already here. Well, he lives down here, but he's already here. He's got an event tonight somewhere up in Tampa.
Unbelievable.
So he's already here.
Yep, he's going to work with Long for, I think, 10 days. He worked with him before the end of the season last year, and he's going to try to shorten his swing and change things around a little bit. And so he's going to work with him for a couple of weeks before he goes out to the West Coast. I think he's going to work with Swisher out there. But he's going to travel around to Tampa and then to the West Coast and work with a couple of the Yankee players to get him ready way before spring training even starts.
That's just unreal because I got a Blue Jays schedule already. They play their first game, I think, February 27th.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
It's unbelievable.
It's 5 weeks. First game.
And I'll tell you, Doug
weeks.
Fernandez here, Tommy, wrote a terrific piece last Sunday in the Sarasota Herald about the Rays. And, you know, I had never taken the time to count the players they lost. I didn't realize they had lost 10 when it's all said and done. They lost 10 players, and, you know, how they're going to overcome the loss of that many players that many positions, because you're talking about everything from catching to middle infield to, mm-hmm. to the center fielders, yeah. to the outfielders, their pitching staff, Garcia, of course, and everybody that they got in return, whether it was Bartlett out in San Diego or Garcia with Chicago, they were all like A players or double A players they got back. And it's going to be very interesting to see what Joe does to make up a major league squad out of what they have left over.
Well, yeah, I think with Jerry Hunsinger, gentlemen, he's the brains of the organization. Andrew Freeman's just a figurehead right there, because Jerry told me a couple of times, I says, I'll make all the decisions for the race. I said, I know that. And Andrew's just a figurehead, because Stu Sternberg was in the, and it was Andrew's friend with Stu Sternberg as, on Wall Street, and Matt Silver too. But Jerry Hunsinger is really the brains of that organization up there. And I'm sure with Jerry and Matt and Joe, man, this team would be respectable. Who knows? Anything could happen in a game of baseball. Look at the Detroit Tigers of 1984, wire to wire. Look at the, I just seen on baseball, on the Major League, on the MLB channel, the 82 St. Louis Cardinals. Oh, check the Brewers. I mean, anything could happen in a great game of baseball. Look at the 1980 Phillies, won the World Series. Him and Dallas Green had the big fight. Dallas Green took over that team. And anything could happen, gentlemen, in a great game of baseball.
Well, I agree
with you. Well, in 83, Pat Corrales was relieved when they were in first place.
That's right.
That's right.
One of the
well, listen, I'm
going to
run.
Ever...
And thanks for everything. And, Tommy, I'll talk to you. Don, I'll talk to you. Fellows, thanks a lot. Yeah.
Okay, Roger.
Care, Roger.
Thank you. And sorry,
care.
Atlanta didn't make it a little further.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You and me both. Take care.
Take care, Roger.
Take care, Roger. Oh, Tim,
yeah,
always great to have Roger
that.
On to me. Great insight of Philadelphia sports. I'm like, oh my God, this is my favorite 2 hours all week, talking to yourself, Don, of course, Bob and Frank and Roger. I mean, this is like the Wednesday night all over again, gentlemen. I thoroughly enjoy it. And who knows, who could win the football picks this week? Probably Katie will.
Probably Katie is right.
Yeah, Don, you're talking about the Rays and losing some. Hal Steinberg. Steinbrenner overrode his GM, Brian Cashman, to give $35 million to Soriano because
wow.
he wanted a closer. That just seems
–
and evidently Cashman didn't think he was worth $35 million to work.
Well, the big problem there, Frank, was it wasn't so much the money. It wasn't so much the money because it's a 2-year contract with a third option, but there's also a buyout – at the end of each year. It's not a 3-year deal solid. And the other thing was that Cashman was not opposed to having Soriano as the eighth inning lead man for Rivera, and also having the confidence that if something did happen to Mariano Rivera, that he would have a closer. His objection to the whole trade and what he didn't want to do was give up that first round draft choice.
Right.
He wanted mm-hmm. the team to have that first round draft choice to build from within, and the Steinbrenners didn't care about the first round draft choice, and so they had a meeting of the minds, and they overruled Cashman a little bit, but only because of the draft choice was Cashman against it.
Yeah.
He wasn't against him signing for the amount of money that he got or the kind of contract that he got, but he didn't want to give up that draft choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that I don't know if it was in Doug's column that I read it or where else. Where I read it, but they said in all these trades that the Rays picked up $290 million cash.
Mm.
And you know, they get rid of a lot of players, but they picked up an awful lot of cash on it, on the deal plus players.
Mm.
Well, I still go back to last year, and you and I and Tommy, and we've all talked about it over and over and over again, and I just felt if they had taken maybe an extra million or $1.5 million and thrown it into paying Dunn for that 6-week period from the middle of August until the end of the season, to give themselves some flexibility behind Pena at first base. He's the only guy who can really hit the long ball for them. He's the only guy who can drive in runs for them. If they had one more bat,
right.
I think they would have been much more competitive in the playoffs. And they weren't going to sign any of these players anyway. So it wouldn't have made any difference. They would have only really been spending another million or $1.5 million and
sure.
and getting a player that may help them go all the way, like Miami did a couple of years ago.
Yes.
You know, that's where I think they made their biggest mistake. They put a lot of money and they set the scales to win it in 2010, and then when they had the chance to win it in 2010, they did spend that little extra money that would have got them, I think, into a real position to really have a chance to win it all.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, just like Pat Gullick did for the Blue Jays and the Phillies.
Exactly.
You rent a player for that. We rent a player for those 2 months. If you sign him, fine. You don't. Remember what they did to Tom Candiotti. Pat Gullick wanted a knuckleball pitcher, and you got him and won the American League East. That's fine. Then and after the next year, you say forget him. And he was back to the Indians the next year pitching. You just rent him for that 6 months, and Pat Gullick was a mastermind of doing that. Jeez almighty. He's great.
Well, he did it with he did it with David Cohn also, if you remember. He brought Cohn the last half of the season.
76ers, boys, right now, going into the fourth period. Right. Fourth quarter. But, it's interesting to me that in this day and age, with the way players move around and shuffle around in all sports, when you have the chance, if you're an owner of a team and you have the chance, you got to put all your eggs in one basket and go for it then, because you know who's going to be there the next year, who's going to get hurt or what's going to happen. You just don't see that many teams repeating and doing things unless they're the Red Sox or the Yankees. And look what the Phillies did. They went right back out and got a lead again.
Yep.
Because they didn't win it all.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, the Rays should be competitive on the field, gentlemen. That's the main thing. And
I hope you're right, Tommy. I hope you're right. But
I just got a gut feeling about that. What happens if, okay, I hope this never happens, if Carl Crawford goes out with an ankle injury? Okay, then probably Derek Jeter goes down. And they say if you get these key injuries for these key positions in these ball clubs, and the Rays are healthy, anything could happen right now. The Rays are in a great position right now. So okay, fine, we got rid of all our players, now build up again and see what happens from there.
Well, stable force they do have is their pitching staff. Their pitching staff is still stable, but when you look at the eight people they're going to have on the field, the eight players on the field. Boy, it's going to be very, very tough. And I don't think, again, with all the negativism about the Trop and about Tampa and all the other things, I don't think they can afford to go back to losing 90, 95 games. If they do that, how many people are they going to have in the stands in August and September? I mean, I just don't think people are ready. It was okay when they were an expansion club and they were building up. But now, the last 3 years, they've been very competitive, up around 90 to 100 wins. Now you go back down to 100 losses. I mean, I just don't know how they're going to draw people.
Don, it's a great, 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 great point. I'm just hoping that they have a great year, and I hope it's not they don't do like the Pittsburgh Pirates, not having a winning season for over 18 seasons. For those, Pittsburgh's a great baseball city. People laugh at the city of Pittsburgh for baseball. It's got more history than Philadelphia does, and for winning championships for the Phillies then.
Well, as I say, I just think they're going to have an awfully tough time. And, look how they got on Madden the last 3 years. And he was winning.
Geez.
I mean, the guy was winning and winning and winning. Took him to the World Series. Took him to the playoffs. Took him to the American League Championship last year. And what are they going to do now? I mean, he's really going to be murder.
I just hate to see you. Joe's a good man, and he learned
baseball,
out of Mike Socha.
He's a good baseball guy.
Oh, he learned out everything from our Springfield, my old classmate Mike Socha, so hopefully they'd be real good. So Lisa Reyes got B.J. Upton, so people can boo B.J. Upton now. He voted arbitration, and Andy Sonnenstein, so at least some of the core is back, but who knows what's going to be going on, hopefully for the best, Don,
Well, B.J. Upton is a player that, old word, potential. You can only use potential for so long. Pretty soon, he's got to get better than hitting 235 and being a good defensive outfielder who causes trouble. I mean, his time has got to come now and I don't think there were a lot of people on the trade market that wanted to make a deal to get B.J. Upton on their team.
I think he reminds me of Alani Smith. Exactly. Alani had all the potential with the Phillies. He got him to the World Series, won a World Series ring. And other than that, he also won with the Cardinals. But other than that, he never had put up the numbers after the one good year with the Phillies and the Cardinals.
And Farnsworth's another one. He's been in trouble with every team, and he's not a good, from all accounts, not a good clubhouse guy. I'm not saying this first-hand knowledge because I don't know, but all I do is read what they say every time he leaves one of these clubs. He's not he's not a good clubhouse guy. He's not a good teammate. He's a, you know, he has moves, very moody. You know, they got rid of those kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
That's how they made their team.
Exactly. You got to have good, like in hockey, you have to keep the room happy. And the players will police themselves. And the same thing for baseball, clubhouse happy. I mean, that's why they, you know, that's why the Rays in 2008 had good. They were, you know, they had a lot of good personnel. The Carlos Pena, Carl Crawford, and Cliff Floyd was there for his experience. And Eric Kinski was there for his experience up there. But I just wish the Rays could have got Jim Thome, you know, for a DH, because Jim's a good friend of mine. And, oh, boy, I can see them right now in the clubhouse. Thome, I'm over here. What do you need?
Well, I think he did a pretty good shot trying to back up with his former club. I think he's got a chance to get back to the championship again.
Oh, I know, but yes, Bob.
We just got a couple seconds left.
Okay, Don, I'd like to thank you for coming on again, sir. Always a pleasure. Same time, same station next week, Don.
You got it, partner. Take care, guys. We'll talk to you later on in the week.
All right,
yes,
Don.
Sir.
Take care.
See you later, Don.
Take care. Bob and Frank, thank you always, sir, for coming on. And thank always Brad for White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. When you purchase a water heater, log on to bradforwhite.com. I'd like to thank Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. I played up there Sunday. Frank, it's a great condition, great course, great fairways. Bob, if you do play up there like I did, I put some in the waters.
There you go.
But give Tom a call, 352-588-5454. Real quick, Bob, funny story real quick. First tee, I was swimming club in a week. One goes in the water, two goes in the water. Okay, let's move on. They go bloop in the water. Oh, boy. Bob, Frank, take it away, sir.
Hey, we want to thank all our friends local and worldwide, especially our guests this evening, especially the lovely Miss Kayla Marie, Mr. Trevor Jay, Mr. Ty Anthony, Mr. Brady Quinn, and I'm going to be a soccer player, Papa, Mr. Caden J. Carroll. All the guys here on the channel, we love you guys.
Good night.
Good night.
There you go.